Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 37 of the Tottenham Way Podcast, the Farewell White Hart Lane episode. Tears, Dan.
Not today.
Did you tear up yesterday?
No.
Really? Oh, you stony...
I've got to be professional, mate. Why do you always put me in these positions where...
Did you feel like you would have done?
My immense professionalism. I feel like I probably would have done if I'd been a fan, yeah. There were a couple of times, I think, when Ginola came out. There was just something about that. I was right by the tunnel, right in the end of the press box. So I was just kind of looking over at him, waiting in the tunnel, getting his phone out, getting ready. And I was just like, oh God, this is going to be a big cheer. This is going to be the biggest one. And then he walked out and I was like, oh.
Yeah, we've already started.
We'll
try and keep it on track. Joining us this week is Ben Schiffer. Ben, welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. You've been an avid listener out here for a while now. But you've been a season ticket holder at White Hart Lane for 20 years, 21 years or so?
Yes, it worked out on the way over here. It's about a third of my life. No, two-thirds.
Wow.
Over two-thirds of my life. It's, yeah.
Think of the money and the emotion that you've spent in that stadium.
Oh, it was all worth it.
Yeah. Did you, just on that, a lot of people were saying that they managed to get hold of something from the stadium and take it away. And the club really don't seem to give a monkeys about it whatsoever. I mean, they handed over the keys this morning and they've already got the diggers in, so I don't think they cared. Did you know of anyone or did you manage to get hold of anything?
As I was walking out, I saw a guy with a big sign, a big plastic sign, and I didn't see what it actually was. But the truth is, like, there wasn't really much to take. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I saw somebody with the home supporters entrance sign on the train.
I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, somebody posted a picture of that.
Pochettino took a framed picture of Hugo Lloris.
From the captain's lounge?
Yeah, from the captain's club.
That's brilliant.
Pochettino did his presser afterwards and then walked out and they were literally taking pictures down from the captain's lounge as he came out. I don't know whether he actually went home with it, but he was like, yes, I'll have that. Thanks very much.
Oh, brilliant.
And so he walked down the stairs with a picture of Lloris.
That's awesome.
It was quality. Imagine that's in his living room now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean...
But they'd already taken all the pictures from the press room when I got there. So there were normally pictures of Genus, Defoe, Robinson, Lennon. It's quite a kind of mid-2000s...
English-centric.
English selection. Kind of an odd selection, but I guess they were the stars at the time. They put them up, and they'd all gone. So someone somewhere has a topless picture of Jermaine Genus, a big one.
There's something interesting about that.
I doubt that's going to the new stadium.
I definitely feel like the staff had got wind that stuff was going. Like, stuff was getting...
I don't think they trusted journalists. I think they were like, we cannot leave these...
Were they right not to trust you?
I mean, had it come to it and I was the last one in the press room, which I almost was, actually. There was no one in there. When I left, I would have probably grabbed Genus and run for it.
That's quite poignant. Maybe you were the last ever journalist to leave White Hart Lane, the press room.
I don't know. Well, we all got kicked out about 8:30, and then me and Tom Allnutt kind of ran down to the pitch to take pictures.
Yeah.
Basically. So I got a sort of picture of doing the peace sign on the edge of the pitch.
Yeah.
But there are a few, journalists kind of hanging around taking pictures because we got kicked out upstairs, but then we sort of went down. And they were kind of Spurs branded cupcakes with the finale
and
sugar paper on top, and it was all quite sweet.
Ben, how long were you there? Was it a case of sort of ceremony over, leave, or?
Yeah, when it finished, after the ceremony, I just sort of left. I mean, lucky it was raining because I definitely was quite teary.
Yeah, I don't blame anyone for that. Anyone at all. There's a lot of people that are saying they couldn't tell how they were going to feel after the game finished. But seeing the flags and seeing all the people spilling onto the pitch and stuff, it was just this kind of burst, the dam burst for a lot of people. No problem with that whatsoever. It's not just bricks and mortar.
Well, I mean, thank God we won.
Because
the whole thing is, we won, so that ceremony could have the power. If we'd have lost, I probably wouldn't have stayed, to be honest.
Really?
Surely not.
I mean, well, I tell you, my friend, my mate, who I've been going with for 20 years, he left early.
Like, that is,
I know, it's
crazy.
Ludicrous. I think it's absolutely ludicrous. But, that's like almost part of his sort of identity as a fan, like leaving early. Like, honestly, like that's so central to his identity.
See, some people were saying that earlier. I think we were talking on WhatsApp about it, that actually it's part of the experience of going to the lane that there's some grumpy bell end a few rows in front who gets up and leaves 10 minutes before the end. Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be the same no, that's, without it, really, yeah. would it? So,
yeah. That is, you know, there's some Tottenham fans, that's part of it for them. Mm.
In the same way as going 2-0 up against a mediocre team in complete control and then having a nervous last 20 minutes, you wouldn't have the finish to White Hart Lane any other way than that, surely.
Well, I really thought United were going to equalise. I thought Rashford was going to equalise. And there was a lot of talk around me that maybe Carrick would be the man to get it.
Awful.
Which would have almost been horribly fitting.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, or in the weeks leading up to this, so we've obviously discussed this a lot on this podcast, and we're talking about what we expected from the last game, how would we feel, etc. And we will come on to that. But there was one question that came up, and Jim, a friend of the pod at Stylish Riot, had the same problem as me in that he can only pick one of Arsenal or Man United to go to as your personal final game. And we toyed with it, and I picked Arsenal. I think Jim picked Arsenal as well. And actually discussing this on the pod, we unanimously all said it's got to be
Did
Arsenal.
Did I say that as well?
You said that as well, yeah. You said you and you were very definite with that as well. And I've been 100% secure with that decision until 90 minutes yesterday.
It was categorically the wrong decision.
Yeah, I know that now, and I hate myself for it. I'm really, really gutted with myself for picking. I mean, at the end of the day, my last ever game at White Hart Lane was a 2-0 win against Arsenal that secured us finishing above them. But seeing it yesterday, it looked like, and
it was amazing. Yesterday. The football was obviously more significant for the Arsenal game.
Yes.
It was a more significant result. I mean, really, yesterday was a dead rubber. I mean, not as much of a dead rubber as the Leicester and Hull games, where I think neither team can change places in either game.
No.
Which is just ridiculous. But it was still more or less meaningless. Spurs obviously wanted to secure second. They wanted to go out with a win. There was the unbeaten season. The Arsenal game was significant, but the occasion yesterday was unbelievable.
And getting onto the pitch.
That was great. But I've got to say, I went to both games, and if I had to pick one, I'd still say the Arsenal game was...
Even with hindsight?
Yeah, because...
Really?
Because coming out of that Arsenal game, you're like, we're going to bloody do it. It's going to happen. We're going to win the league. And, you know, and you have that excitement of beating, you know, those horrible, horrible people. And...
I think that's a fair point. Maybe we're looking at the Arsenal game with the kind of hindsight and with the context of the West Ham defeat as well, because you're right, at the time the Arsenal game still felt like it could be a step toward the title,
whereas
we knew the Man U game wasn't, but it just still for me the occasion of yesterday was unbeatable. There won't be, I mean obviously there won't be another experience like it at Wild Lane, but I'm not sure there'll be another kind of footballing experience in terms of what it meant for the club, not just about the 11 players on the pitch playing the game of football, but the whole kind of fabric of the club. And I think I really agreed with people that said, I think Paul Hayward, writing in the Telegraph, said that you understand what a club's about when you go to an event like that, when you go to an occasion like that. And one thing I have realised writing about Spurs over the last few months, trying to get in touch with the last team to finish above Arsenal, trying to get in touch with former players to ask them what it means to finish above Arsenal, to ask them what it means to play at White Hart Lane, to what it means to have been there. I spoke to quite a few in the end. I was very lucky in that respect. And every single one of them has a great affection for Tottenham and is almost like a Tottenham fan now. And
you
sort of realise that actually the club do a lot of things wrong, but one thing they are good at is sort of remaining like a family on and off the pitch. I think that really came across yesterday.
I mean, the atmosphere was incredible. Like that, I'm not sure I've ever had an experience of that sort of crowd atmosphere. Mm. And the thing that was wonderful was like the chanting for the former players.
Yeah, that started on about half an hour, didn't it? It was, because obviously the last game of a season, you tend to get all the songs come out for the current players, but I kind of liked that it was this fan-led it wasn't a planned, wasn't part of a ceremony, nobody sent an email out from Spurs officials saying on 30 minutes start your chanting in this order or anything. It was purely fan led, and that was one of my favourite parts. Watching it on telly, obviously, but that was one of my favourite parts of watching it. Just the one thing that you was completely out of control, and it had to be a huge 30,000 voice that chose to sing. Van der Vaart and Archibald came out, which I really loved. Yeah. Ledley.
Stefan Freund,
yeah. Of course. Yeah. Aaron Lennon, which was a really nice touch.
That was very poignant.
Yeah. I think that was one of my favourite parts. Do you think, Ben, it was a celebratory more than a sad atmosphere then?
Yeah, completely. I mean, yeah, it was a massive, massive celebration. That pitch invasion was so joyous. You know, that, you know, when you were talking about taking stuff from the stadium, there was a really like a permissive atmosphere. Like probably my favorite moment of the whole day, when I was on the pitch, I was taking selfies and I saw a steward who's there to get people off the pitch. He was taking photos of people. People were going up to the stewards, giving them their phones, and they're taking photos. And I went over to the steward just to like say like, oh, thanks, mate. And he just like hugged me. I was not looking for that, but he just hugged me, and it was like that was really, really awesome. And you know, and then you've got Paul Coit the whole time going, you know, get off the pitch, get off the, and it was I mean,
he did a decent job, I thought, Paul Coit. There was one incredibly Partridge moment that me and a few of the guys in the press box were cracking up about, when he was like, there are some children around and some legends who are not as young as you are. But apart from that Partridgian moment, I thought he did actually quite a good job of not losing his rag.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like, could have been like, get the fuck off the bench.
He was all right, but like, you know, eventually at a certain point, you know, people are trying to get off the pitch, but it's a bit of a bottleneck. You mean, you've got to wait to get back on, and he's still like going, get off the, and it's like, we're clearly all getting off the pitch, like, chill out, mate.
And I think there's a lot of rumours going around that people were maybe two or three deep in their seats, particularly on the shelf side. So we've heard that there was maybe more people.
Had that confirmed by a couple of
people. Yes, okay. There was definitely more than what is usually expected to have been on the pitch had there been a pitch invasion, put it that way. I would love to see the actual official attendance for that game, because I think, well, we've got a reduced capacity, but there was people talking like it could have quite easily hit normal capacity / up to 40,000.
How's that possible?
Bribes.
Bribes? At the
turnstile? Possibly. I want to be a bit careful about this.
Well, this is all rumours.
Yeah.
This is all rumours.
Even though I just said I had it confirmed. Yeah. I also heard the rumours, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. So confirmation is a strong word. Yeah. We've all heard that there were rumours. And I knew someone that went to the game yesterday, and he said a couple of rows down there were people that were quite happy to share their seats. Some of it was just people sharing it, deciding to go and sit with their friends. And I think stewards were being a little bit lenient with that, just as fair enough. Like, who cares? Last days of Rome and all of that. Yeah, it was. Any other standout moments, maybe from the game itself? Anything that was. Because it did feel like there was a proper football game going on as well. It's a good game.
Just, I'm not a huge fan in general of plastic flags. But some of the songs, I think the Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, with the flag waving. Mm. Owen the Spurs, when the flags came out again, were just incredible, incredible moments. And because the whole stadium was on board with it. And at the start of the game, there was the usual kind of back and forth between the shelf side and the Park Lane, which was great. And even the Paxton was joining in. But it's always a great moment when you get the whole of White Hart Lane united in kind of one song. And on those occasions, the flags really did add to it. And just sitting and sort of looking around the stadium almost like a panoramic was just, yeah, that's a kind of memory I will long treasure, I think, of White Hart Lane.
Thing is, well, now, because you've got the stadium kind of looming over White Hart Lane, it, over the course of a season, it's felt like it's built to that sort of moment, you know, and we've always known in the back of our minds that there was going to be a final game at White Hart Lane. We just didn't know whether it was going to be this season or next season. And I think we said a couple of weeks ago on the pod about how it felt a bit accelerated now, because no matter how much we knew we were going to Wembley, until you had that signature on the line and it definitely happening, we couldn't really kind of come to terms with the fact that we were leaving White Hart Lane. And then suddenly it was like, oh shit, we've got Arsenal and United and that's it. And then it's done. And the fact that you can kind of see it building up, it felt like adding to the occasion a bit. I might just be a bit romantic with it here, but the fact that you can see this tangible progress that we're making, and we're not just shooting across town 3 or 4 miles away, we are building on the same site. It kind of felt like people were having stuff buried with them, if you know what I mean. You know that idea that people have.
I think it was really significant and really poignant.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, when I've been wondering about how I feel about the stadium, and at certain points I have been kind of worried about, you know, I keep looking at the images of the new stadium and like then looking at images of the Emirates and trying to go, is it different? And they keep saying, you know, they're saying it's different, but looking at the images, they don't look that dissimilar. But then the fact that it's still going to be Tottenham, and all the, you know, Chick King's still going to be there, yeah. You know. And I personally like this place called Koyam, this weird Afghan place where I get this lovely feta and spinach wrap. But anyway,
where's that?
It's just opposite the stadium. Sorry,
which side?
It's just down the road from Chick King. I will tell you. I mean, right. We can go into it because it is delicious. £2.50.
Well, there used to be a place called Lamouchi's down Park Lane, which was only open once in the entire time that I was going to Spurs, and it was the end of the season. I think we played Man City and maybe lost the last game, and we went past, and Lamouchi's was actually open, and it was. I mean, people talk about memories of White Hart Lane. That's in my top five. when Lamouchi's was finally open.
So the fact that it's still going to be Tottenham is so significant. So I think that's, you know, that's tempered a lot of sadness or apprehension I might have had. And then I read a really amazing thing just today. So apparently Bill Nick's ashes are buried under the pitch.
Oh, do you read Dave Heitner's piece?
Yeah.
The Guardian? Yeah, I didn't know that either.
And so they're going to put it under the pitch of the new stadium.
Yeah,
apparently.
I didn't know that either.
Presumably in an urn.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah.
And protected from the retractable NFL pitch, hopefully.
Yeah. So the pitch retracts and it's just an urn.
Significance.
Watch the urn.
But I mean, but that's awesome, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. There was a lot of clubs that you speak to fans of various clubs, and I think Harry Sherlock said it. You said there's so many other teams that are jealous of the way that we've done it. You know, it's football. There's change. You have to accept that.
Imagine
there's a progression.
The last game, we're going to the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah. Even Man City's ground, you know,
knowing what a shit show it is.
Yeah, yeah. You think of the places that these teams have left as well. You think of Main Road, and you think of Highbury, and Upton Park and stuff. And you do just think, like, how you cannot replicate it. So the best thing you can do is make a new stadium that is going to give you the best fighting chance of doing that. And no club's really done that yet. And it does feel like we've done the right things.
I think, yeah, to kind of follow up Ben's point, it probably will look like the Emirates, but I think Spurs have kind of learned lessons from the Emirates and the Etihad and the Olympic Stadium and Wembley, which have all been built in the last decade or so. And I think it's going to be, even though the NFL are going to be there and there's a separate entrance for them and whatnot and different facilities, and obviously that's a big part of it, they are building a specialist football stadium, and they have made sure that there is going to be proximity to the pitch and atmosphere is a primary consideration and all this kind of stuff. They're not just building an elite modern venue. I think that has been sort of key to the club's kind of marketing and rhetoric around the new stadium. Like, this is going to be a football stadium. So I think given that, and given that it is on the old site of the White Hart Lane, and as Chaz and Dave said at halftime yesterday, it's actually closer to White Hart Lane than the current stadium.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, it's good news.
I mean, I have a lot of faith. You know, it's funny you say that the club do a lot of things wrong, and, you know, I'm sure you're in a much better position to know all the things that they do wrong. But I mean, I think we're such a well-run club. Like, who's a better chairman than Daniel Levy? Like, I really for the club we are and the money we've got, nobody, you know, we punch above our weight. So, you know, it was Arsenal.
Mm.
You know, they're the only sort of comparable club. And, you know, since David Dean left...
I completely agree. I think Spurs are really well run. I think it's more of a general... With the ceremony, it's the kind of thing that a football club could have got very wrong.
Yeah, and have got wrong and, in I the mean, last 12
there's
months.
There's a very obvious recent example.
Yeah.
But just to go back to it, for me, honestly, it was perfect. I mean, Pochettino said afterwards it was perfect.
Mm.
And I couldn't have really thought of anything... Even that I would change.
The rain and the rainbow. Like,
the rainbow.
The rainbow was unbelievable.
What an amazing
metaphor.
When I just
looked up and I was next to Tom Horner and I was like, mate, there's a fucking rainbow. There's a fucking rainbow. This is amazing.
Your picture was like, you trended in London. Did you see this?
I didn't see that. No.
They sent you a tweet. It's called trend maps or something like that. They send you a tweet to let you know.
Yeah.
And it said, hey, Dan KP. You are trending in London. It shows you the tweets that are trending.
Holy
and two
shit.
Of them were the rainbow ones because it got like 500 in half an hour or something like that.
Yeah, I did get in quite early, but then obviously everyone was snapping the rainbow. Yeah. But it was, yeah. And again, I think that the piece you referred to in The Guardian by Dave Heitner, he said he couldn't have imagined a more perfect scene. And... yeah, I'm with him. It was just like you're looking out. And
even on Sky, you guys probably wouldn't have seen this, but on Sky, Martin Tyler was obviously commentating as best he could on that. And he was, obviously it had wound down a bit. And to a non-Spurs fan, it could have been quite boring, actually. And even as a commentator, like he's 70-odd and getting on, he's probably not really fancying it much. And he was just like, and we say, obviously, goodbye. And there's a rainbow to end. And he was like, God, picking up like the stadium and allowing it to go to heaven. He was so grand. It was brilliant.
Have you seen those guys videoing the double rainbow in the US National Park?
Yeah.
like on acid or something. That's how I felt. I was like, it's starting to look like a double rainbow. I was just loving it.
Great moment, though. No. The ceremony itself, I think you're right. You're absolutely right there in that it could have gone... It could have been done very badly. And I do feel like the key is in what you don't do in those sort of things. You know, if you try and do too much, then you do end up with West Ham's like pantomime show that they put on this time last year. We had the London Choir, is that... I think that's maybe right, or North London Choir.
London Gospel Choir.
We had the legends come out in alphabetical order, like... No, there were
the drummers as well.
Yes, one. Yeah, and that film with Kenneth Branagh as well, which was actually, you do learn a little bit through that. But again, it was there was no like, we're the best thing in the whole world. It was this. It felt like it was four supporters and nobody else. And Sky broadcast it, but
it was just very simple and understated. Mm. Like, all you really want on that kind of occasion is to celebrate some legends, which we got one by one.
And Simon Davis. I don't want to be harsh, but that was weird.
There was
it?
A couple of people called that out. I'm a big fan of Digger.
I love Davis. He was one of my favourite ever Spurs players, actually. But I don't really understand why he was on. You think of the players that were there. Even Edinburgh won a trophy with us.
Two trophies,
yes, you're absolutely right.
I think there was just around about... The sort of turn of the millennium, there was just a shortage of legends, wasn't there? I mean, sort of Teddy and Anderton, but they're more like mid-90s, late 90s. And then you get to about 2000, 2001, it was a bleak time.
Yeah.
And so we got Simon Davis.
He's not really doing much.
No, and David House.
And David House.
He left in about 98, didn't he?
There was a lot of sort of overweight, tanned men who walked on the pitch... who I just didn't recognise. And you could, you know, where I was, you couldn't really hear, you know, they're announcing who they are and you can't really hear it. Mm. So it's like, don't know who that guy is.
I mean, Eric Thorsvet was on my train.
Oh, was he?
And people were getting selfies and I was like, okay, I sort of guessed it was Eric Thorsvet, but he's just before my time, so I couldn't have been sure.
Mm.
I'd have put your life on it. but certainly not my life.
Fair. Yeah, fair. No, you've got to go with the insurance value.
The one thing that I thought it was very dignified, beautiful ceremony, but the guy I was sitting with, my mate, he said, it's going to be Adele. She's going to sing.
Yeah, a lot of rumours.
Yeah, there's a lot of chat about that. I think she's going to open the new stadium.
Okay.
What, Wembley?
The new Tottenham Stadium.
Oh, great. Well, let's put
the lid on that. Can I raise something? There was one thing that got mentioned to me by someone else yesterday. A Spurs fan who thought that the whole kind of branding around the lane, the finale, and the hashtag, the name of the sort of whole day, as it turned out, was maybe a little bit cynical and another kind of attempt to distance the club from the White Hart Lane name, even though the club is actually going nowhere. Because, you know, there is this whole thing about the station isn't going to be called White Hart Lane anymore. Mm. It's probably going to be called Tottenham Hotspur.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Or Tottenham.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Or
Tottenham, okay. Mm.
Yeah, sorry.
And the new stadium, as Chaz or Dave pointed out, in exactly the same place, even close to White Hart Lane, but there does seem to be a sort of concerted effort from the club that it's not going to be called that and just forget about it.
Yeah,
the lane is finished, and now it's something new. Did you have any views on that? Or was that just
I didn't. No, it's not something that I noticed. But you, as
it's something a Spurs fan mentioned to me, and not something I'd really considered before, and not something that I really think is a particular issue, but.
But that's,
there you go.
I mean, that's just clearing the way for, you know, the Uber Stadium or the American Express Stadium.
Well, exactly.
They call
that's the thing.
But that's fine. But the fans will always sing, "We are Tottenham, Super Tottenham from the lane." Do you know what I mean? And we'll still be there. So
I think there's an interesting balance that the club have clearly maybe tried to hit in the last 6 months of. There's that element of don't worry, we're not going anywhere, but also things are going to be very different. And I guess it's exactly what you're saying there, isn't it? But we'll see. I think you said it a few months ago when we first had Greg Stobart on the pod and we were talking about the naming rights and things like that. I think Greg had maybe just...
He did the White Hart Lane name change story.
Qatar Airways one?
And Qatar Airways.
Yeah, so there was the talk of that. And we had a discussion about that and we said like we will always call it White Hart Lane or the Lane or whatever. And I can't remember if it was yourself or Greg that said that, but eventually you do... hit that kind of turning point where the sort of the new fans and the new generation come through and they
Greg made the point that, you know, originally the Emirates was going to be called Ashburton Grove, and for about 6 months everyone called it Ashburton Grove, but when was the last time you heard anyone say that name?
But it's just because it's in a different place, though. If they'd have knocked down Highbury and rebuilt Highbury, I don't know, but I reckon people would make fans would still call it Highbury, you know, all the commentators, everyone who's sort of contractually obliged to call it the Emirates would call it the Emirates, but the people in the stadium, you know,
and I hope that makes a difference that it's in the same place, but
we don't know the game. We're not going to talk about the game itself. I don't think there's any need to. It was a good game of football, actually, as a standalone game, but Harry Kane said afterwards on Sky that the players were desperate to win it, and it didn't feel like... It wasn't the first words out of his mouth. And I always feel like that's quite key for a footballer's interview, when particularly in front of the TV cameras. That first line is always the, we always want to win a game. Or, it was great to win for the fans sort of thing. And he kind of reiterated it. He said after, he was like, we were desperate to win today. And this, again, might be romanticising it, but you really felt like he meant it. And maybe after West Ham and the fact that, you know, we'd lost the title race, it was kind of, this is it now. This is all we've got. We've got to win this last game at White Hart Lane because it's the last game at White Hart Lane. Do you think it was maybe emotion got us over the line for that last 20 minutes, say?
Not really. You know, this idea that it was a nervous last 20 minutes. I mean, you know, what Rashford went through twice, right? I felt like it was, you know, what it was funny. Again, me and my friends were sitting there talking. It's like, this is normal now. We're like beating Man United at home, and we're doing the same thing that we do to everybody when they come to White Hart Lane. It's just choke the life out of them, and we have all the ball, and we're always in their half, and we're so sort of clinical, you know. And I really didn't think it was all that nervy, actually, to be honest. So I didn't have that, you know. 5 years ago, you're 2-0 up against Man United and you're shitting yourself for the rest of the game. But, you know, honestly, I was very calm. I thought it didn't really seem that nervy to me.
Testament to the absolute beautiful bastard of a team we're leaving White Hart Lane with, isn't it?
What, the result?
Yeah, and yeah, just the team, full stop, just the everything that, you know, after when we, like you say, the fact that it's becoming normal for us to turn over a top six team, or what, a top four, sorry, yeah. Well, yeah, but it's
no,
true.
That's,
you know,
great. That's what they are now. Yeah, they're a top six team.
A bad, or a poor team, essentially, but just better than every 14 other teams in the league. But it's, we're leaving White Hart Lane with a hell of a team, aren't we?
Yeah, and we're leaving it unbeaten as well, which is...
Oh, my heart. Yes. Honestly, yeah, means everything. And Pochettino's face, he...
Man, Pochettino was close to breaking.
He was proud, isn't he?
He was emotional, actually. He did a picture in the press room afterwards. He sort of insisted on bringing all the coaches in. So it was him and
Big Tony
and the other two. Big Tony and Miggy. Hey, Miggy, come in, get in. So I think he was getting quite sentimental, actually. And yeah, it's, I mean, in a way, it is a shame that we are leaving on such a high, because I do think Wembley's going to be so much harder. But yeah, what more can you say, really?
Yeah, if it had to happen,
yeah,
do it unbeaten. Yeah, incredible. We should do a few listener questions, because we had quite a few and a lot of them were spilled over from last week as well. And because, you know, this is a bit of a special episode, it'd be good to get a few perspectives. Richie at Richie PUK, what's the highest and the lowest you've ever left White Hart Lane?
I think I know what the lowest is. It's when me and you went to that Newcastle game last season. And you just, it was obviously a crap result, but you just bummed me out so hard.
Pardon me.
Well, we were just both so miserable. And I remember I was like, should we have a beer, mate? You was like, no, I'm just going to go home. So I was just really depressed.
You got the quintessential Tom Hayward White Hart Lane experience.
Yeah, I should say this was when we were in the Park Lane as fans. Yeah, that was definitely among the lowest.
Blimey, not lived.
Yeah, not that if it even a bad result, it was just your morose presence.
But you get that at wins as well, Dan. It's brilliant.
Well, I've not sat with you at win. That's the only time I've ever been to White Hart Lane with you.
Well, you got a big bad job, didn't you? And went and sat in the comfy seats.
The highest, you know, it might have been one of the last two games. I have to choose one as a fan, because
I think we should also treat United and Arsenal maybe as givens.
Okay, yeah, I think as a fan, it is a different kind of high.
Should we let you think about it? Ben, have you got...
I've thought about it.
21 odd years, the odd high and low.
The low is... It's my first memory of White Hart Lane. Again, my friend asked me, what's your first memory? Do you remember your first game? I don't remember my first game. My first memory is we got beaten 6-1 at home by Chelsea.
Chelsea, yeah.
And, you know, I was, what, 14 or something?
Who scored our goal? Sorry, I just found this out the other day and it amazed me.
Not a clue.
Do you know who scored our goal?
What year was it?
99?
I think 97 or something.
97, yeah. Christian Gross.
Christian Gross scored, did he?
No, sorry, Christian... well, sorry. I was miles away then.
No idea.
Ramon Vega. The way to make that day bleaker, Ramon Vega scored to cut the deficit. Maybe that's why.
So that was the lowest. I mean, that you know, I was 14 and, you know, that was a seminal moment in my life. Highest, maybe that 3-1 into Milan, the Bale thing. Because we'd never seen anything like that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you know, I sat on the East Lower and... what, you know, that moment when Bale runs through and crosses for Pavlyuchenko, I've never seen athleticism like that in my life, and I had the perfect view of it. It's, you know, astonishing.
Bale against Inter Milan was my, or the 3-1 against Inter Milan was my high point. It was the fact that after that goal, when Bale had knocked it past Lucio, put it in for Pav, and we were holding on by then, weren't we? Because Eto'o had scored to make it 2-1,
right?
and it was 10 minutes to go. And I remember the goal so vividly. So we were camped on the edge of our own box, and Cabal won the ball, passed it to Modric, I think, and he gave it to Bale, and Bale just went. And he put the ball in, and Pav scored. And you could see it happening 10 seconds before it had happened. You saw Pav breaking through, and he did what he did best, which was just put the ball in the back of the net. And everyone went crazy. The whole stadium was just rocking and vibrating around me. And I remember looking at my mate, and he was pissing himself laughing. He just couldn't. He's the same as you. He'd been going for 20-odd years. And he was like beside himself laughing, not even cheering anymore. He's just like, what is happening here? You know, and that was one of my favourite moments, just of a proper high.
That taxi for Mike on chant was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because it was so spontaneous. Mm. It was, do you know what I mean? That was just like a spontaneous bit of wit. And everyone got it, and it was instantly like a classic.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant.
Just to go on my low before you talk about your high, my lowest point was leaving White Hart Lane after we just lost 1-0 to Arsenal under Sherwood, but not because we just lost to Arsenal, but because I didn't care. I genuinely didn't have a single emotion about losing that game 1-0. It was annoying, but we went 1-0 down after about 50 seconds. For the rest of the game, we met, belter as well. And it meant nothing to me. It always means something to lose to them, but I felt nothing for it. And that hurt more than losing the game, the fact that I didn't feel anything. And that is the lowest I felt. And that's probably why I feel so much affinity to Pochettino, because he kind of gave me back. He made me fall in love with Spurs again, basically. But that's probably the lowest I've ever felt leaving White Hart Lane. If not, maybe, I don't know, 1-0 Wigan. Roddy Jaeger last minute, the game before Van der Vaart, no less. Dan, have you got a high?
Yeah, I didn't go really under Harry, so I haven't got any of those kind of amazing Champions League or big league win memories. But I think my best memory at White Hart Lane, I can't say whether I left on the biggest high, my best memory was beating Everton 5-1 on New Year's Day when Dean Marnie.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't used to go a lot back then, so it was kind of like I didn't live in London. It was kind of like a treat if someone in my family would get me a ticket. And my sort of fixer cousin Tony had managed to get sort of 5 or 6 tickets for the extended family in a row. And I wasn't really anticipating much. I think it was under Yol, and we were all right. Mm. We were a bit up and down. And it was just an amazing game. We all had a sort of bit of a hangover. And yeah, Dean Marnie scored 2 screamers.
Absolute worldies.
I think the next game after that, and I was really kind of excited then. I thought, you know, what they're going to do. And the next game was Mendes's at Old Trafford.
Oh.
That was the game after, I think.
Really?
Like January 3rd or 4th, yeah. And had Spurs actually got the 3 points they deserved for that, it was actually starting to look like a really promising season. I think the year after that was the Lasagna game.
Yes, that sounds about right.
It was just about the time when Spurs were sort of becoming relevant, if you know what I mean.
It's what Yol did for us.
Yol brought us back, right?
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I was so happy to see him there yesterday. It's good to see Redknapp.
He didn't come on the pitch.
Birkinshaw, Pleat, Redknapp and Yol were all there, and I thought they'd come out kind of after all the players, and that was the only thing that was slightly odd.
Mm.
I mean, they deserved that, didn't they?
Yeah, that was really, Where was Stefan Freund?
I don't know where Freund was. I mean, Klinsmann was at Boca River, oddly.
He was there at Arsenal, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was at Arsenal. Perryman was at Exeter playoff match in Carlisle, I think. Houghton was at Brighton's bus tour.
Fair.
Gazza didn't feel he could come, though he was invited. Lineker said on Twitter he couldn't come for whatever reason.
Mm.
Sol Campbell?
No, invited. Someone did a hilarious Photoshop, which had me laughing today, on just the my rainbow picture, but they just photoshopped a kind of ghostly Campbell head rainbow, grinning. It did make me laugh a lot, actually.
Other absences, obviously Van der Vaart wasn't there.
Van der Vaart, he was invited, and just I don't think he could be asked. He put something in the
but program. Sigurdsson was there and Townsend were there. They both posted pictures to social media about being there, but nothing from Gareth Bale, which has kind of rubbed people up the wrong way today. And just because we mentioned Bale there just about 5 minutes ago, I just wanted to touch on this before we go on to the next question. How do you feel about that? because he should go down, and he will go down as one of our best ever Premier League players. Maybe best ever, you know, in history to play for us. I can understand
our best
why
ever player.
One of the best ever players.
He's up there. I mean, in terms of sheer talent,
probably.
I'm not saying, I don't think he's the best, but I think, you know,
he's not our best ever player. I'm just going to throw that out there. He's
not our best
ever.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I don't think he was too far off.
He was a good one.
But for how good he was, he was our best player.
For one season, he was a superstar.
Yeah, maybe two Champions League, I'd say. The Champions League season put us... He got everyone talking. So
sure,
we're going a little
he
bit
He was
off.
A good one. He was a good player.
He was, but the fact is, you know, Simon Davis went. Right, I'm not going to drop this. Simon Davis went, but... We didn't get anything from Bale, even a, you know, you look at Defoe, say, for instance, as an example. He put something on Twitter, posted a few photos. You know, I'm not being funny. You get your social media team to do that sort of stuff. Felt like Bale had been a little bit like, you know, it's beneath me now. No, I don't know if I'm being a bit harsh.
That's certainly how it's
come across.
I've been talking about this on WhatsApp with a few people today, and I was kind of trying to defend Bale. You know, the thing is, and this is what I said, is that someone can really show on the pitch how much it matters to them with incredible performances week in, week out. And, you know, Bale for that season, he obviously cared. There's no one that wanted to win for Tottenham more than he did. There's no one who was better for Tottenham than he did. He was absolutely phenomenal. But then he's never really showed much love to the club publicly. He's never done anything on social media. He's never really done an interview where he's gushed about Tottenham. But then on the flip side, you kind of get someone like Lewis Holtby or Soldado, who were absolutely pants, but then they're very good at kind of saying how much they care about Tottenham. And fans almost seem to prefer that to someone like Bale, who doesn't open up but was incredible in the shirt. And I can kind of get it, you know. As people said to me today, you know, you want to know that they care as much as you do, or they at least care an iota as much as you do. Mm. But I've got one memory of Bale actually when I was at White Hart Lane as a fan, and he was, I think he was suspended or injured for a game, and I can't remember which game it was now, but he was sitting in the director's box, and I was in must have been the Park Lane. Mm. He was maybe sitting on the shelf in one of the boxes, or he was. He was within sight, and everyone around spotted it was Bale. And it was during the AVB season, the incredible season. And everyone turned around and chanted at him, "Stand up if you love Tottenham." And he didn't stand up.
All right.
So he just kind of looked very shy and kind of bashful and just sort of grinned a bit and waved.
Mm.
But he's never really been someone who sort of has publicly worn his heart on his sleeve when it comes to sort of saying that he cares about Spurs. And.
Mm.
So, well, I don't think he does, really.
Yeah, I was about to say, so he probably
I do
doesn't.
Think as well, the whole thing of Holt being Soldado and stuff like that, we've seen this season a couple of footballers get caught out with the... Was it Anichebe earlier in the season that
yeah,
the tweet
again
went out?
Today, I think it happened with Lukaku or something.
Yeah,
today.
There was somebody that said something like, "Can you put something like..." And then it gave the quote.
Yeah.
You know, don't read into this sort of shit. It's not worth it, really. They instruct their social media team to do it. I agree that it probably would have been good of Bale to do it, but there has been a little bit of a meltdown, possibly because
I
of his profile.
Why do you care? Like, honestly, like, you know, it's great if they do it. If they don't, you know, well, he left us for loads of money and, you know, he was great for us. And I think it's... It's quite weird and childish to care what this multimillionaire guy who has left us for what he saw as bigger and better, you know, not he saw,
well, you know,
which
the,
were
on the
bigger
flip
and better.
Side, you could say, you know, Tottenham and White Hart Lane, you know, got Gareth Bale where he is today. He came to the club as a 17-year-old left back, albeit a very promising one, and Tottenham made him a superstar, and he owes Tottenham something, and to not acknowledge a very significant day in the history of Tottenham is childish
but
from him.
That's, you know, what I'm saying. He's a book. What a weird word to use. Yeah, no, he's like, exactly, like some guy who's clearly, you know, doesn't care or, you know, isn't savvy enough to pretend. who cares? You know, so what? Why let that spoil what was an incredibly moving, yeah, wonderful occasion? You know, the people who care. You know, David Ginola. Like, you know, he cared enough to show up. And
that got me. That was the only bit that got me.
Oh, when he was filming himself.
When he came out.
Yeah.
To Ginola.
Yeah.
And he's about 50. He's had a major heart attack, and he looks better than I ever have, yeah, or ever will do.
Yeah.
That man is godly.
Sheringham, he had a heart attack. That's right. I've forgotten.
Yeah. I didn't know if he was going to come because there's been very little reported about his kind of health.
Mm.
And he nearly died.
Yeah, it was quite serious.
Sheringham
in his white jacket.
He looked fucking cool.
Well, Sky...
He dressed for summer, hadn't he? And
yeah.
He hadn't predicted the rain.
Again, Sky said... they obviously trying to say something about every single person that came out for the ceremony. And Martin Tyler, bafflingly, said, great man, Teddy Sheringham, always looked about 21 years of age, not aged a day. And you're like, are you looking at Teddy Sheringham or are you looking at a photo of Teddy Sheringham when he was 21? Because he has looked about 52 since he was about, I don't know, 25, like mid-20s. He is a leathery man, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he looks good for his age. Just to go back to the Bale thing, why do you let it bother you? Do you know what I mean? We had an amazing occasion. Amazing players came out for us. Like, if somebody doesn't say something, they're irrelevant. Do you know what I mean?
He wished Arsenal luck in an FA Cup final as well. Or he wished Theo Walcott luck before an FA Cup final. So
fuck him. He doesn't get it.
Fuck him. Does not get it. We've got time for a couple more questions. Ed at Tio Alcantara. Favourite goal at White Hart Lane? Nice and simple one, this. Favourite goal you ever saw? I mean, you've got 21 years worth to pick from here. Somebody did a best opposition goal and best goal you saw for Spurs as well, and the opposition one was there were some crackers in there. Do you remember Umtiti for
Lyon?
Yeah,
Umtiti, yeah.
There was quite a few that came out that were pretty good.
The opposition one is not a White Hart Lane memory, but the goal that what's his name? Jesus. The great Chelsea striker, Drogba. Yeah, that goal he scored against us in the sort of FA Cup semi-final. Remember, he took it on his chest and then swiveled. I mean, that was outrageous.
Was that White Hart Lane?
No, that was at Wembley. I gave the caveat that it was not White Hart Lane. But the best White Hart Lane goal for Spurs, Danny Rose, Arsenal debut.
Mm.
Again, from my perspective, it was I just saw it. And I've still got it in my memory. I'm just like going, that ball's not going in. There's not, what? I mean, this isn't, what? Oh my God.
And you had enough time exactly. as well to think all of those things.
Yeah, honestly, from my perspective, I about 3 seconds, I'm watching this ball go in and it was, that was phenomenal.
Yeah. Dan?
Come back to me.
Oof.
I'm not very good at these
snap
these
ones.
Quick fire answers.
Should have read the running order,
I know,
Dan.
But you didn't send it in time.
You know what? I saw a video, so obviously there's been a lot of video compilations that Spurs have put out, and a lot of people have put together sort of fan channels and stuff. I've got to say, a lot of them are really, really good, and not just saying that, there are a few people out there that are genuinely very talented at doing this sort of thing. I saw a Greaves goal. Somebody posted
against
the 4-1.
Man U.
It left me like open-mouthed, and not many goals do that, and particularly sort of ones from way back, because it's quicker and more athletic and seemingly more impressive now.
It's almost that.
He didn't touch the ground. I've never seen anything like it. He goes past about, because he gets the ball with his back to goal and he turns one player and he goes past maybe two or three others and he doesn't even change direction. It's just an arrow and then he goes around the keeper and he puts it in and it's one of the best goals I've ever seen.
One movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole thing.
And people talk about Greaves and they talk about these old players.
We've mentioned all the players that haven't been there and we haven't mentioned Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
And obviously couldn't make it for health reasons, but no one scored more goals at White Hart Lane than Jimmy Greaves.
Mm.
177.
That is obscene.
Mm.
That is obscene. But looking at clips like
14 hat tricks as White Hart Lane as well.
It's a bit Ronaldo, isn't it? Almost like
prototype. Well, it's funny you say that. Ronaldo's just at the same time the ceremony was going on. Ronaldo was scoring twice for Real Madrid last night against Sevilla, and has just equaled Greaves' European goal record for the top five leagues.
Oh, wow, right.
Only just. So he's had that record for 46 years.
Mm.
And Ronaldo will break it before the end of the season.
Mm.
But what a goal scorer Jimmy Greaves was.
Yeah.
And a lot of his, particularly his kind of 120-odd goals for Chelsea, are kind of lost in the ether because it was before widespread coverage.
Yeah, yeah, but that's a shame. Yeah, when you talk about the way
late 50s, but
the way that people talk about him, and when my granddad would talk about him and stuff, it is a shame that there's not more. Well, I guess there's a shame in some parts, but also the people that went and experienced him and saw that live will have that. You know, you can get footage of under 21 reserve fixtures now, and it kind of takes that away maybe a little bit. But
I mean, had Greaves managed to be there yesterday, the reception he would have got, I would have been a broken man.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Well, yeah. There was a moment when we were watching, you know, they're showing that film, and when Bill Nicholson came on and like everybody started clapping. That is what a football club's about. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You know, this guy who, when did he died actually not that long ago in the late 90s, maybe.
I think it was 2001, I think.
Right, yeah, but you know, a guy who was, you know, had nothing to do with any Tottenham that I've ever experienced. You know, Keith Birkinshaw doesn't have anything to do with any Tottenham I've experienced. And yet this guy comes on screen and everybody claps.
Hmm.
And that's, like, that is moving. And yeah, and again, I go back to the, you know, the ashes under the pitch. Like, that is what, you know, a football club, that's the point of a football club, I think, actually. Mm. That sort of permanence and that like, that sort of, it's like a folk memory.
Yeah.
Was it a good line from Levy on the big screen, which is that we're the custodians of this place. And that was summed up what you were saying, really, that the club and the stadium and the bricks and mortar are going to be there long after the current team, long after the current chairman, long after we're all dead and gone, and it will just continue into the next generations, and hopefully they will be remembering Dele Alli and Harry Kane in the same way that we're kind of talking about Greaves now.
Kane got his 49th goal at White Hart Lane yesterday, one short of hitting 50 just before he left. It's such a shame, but you know, he's got the last Tottenham goal at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, can I take, like, this is a funny story and I've just thought of it, but so, you know, being a season ticket holder for 20 years, now we've been sitting in the same spot for maybe 10 years, and there was, there's always, you know, you don't know these people, but you know them because they're sitting beside you and you just listen to them talk. And there was a father and son who used to sit behind us, and they were so annoying. Like, they were just... have just crap jokes constantly. And they used to, one of them, the dad used to say, his constant complaint was like, have a word. Like, somebody would make a mistake and they'd like, I have a word. I was just, it would melt my brain because it's like, okay, what are they going to say? Shoot better. Like, it's a stupid thing to say. And then I really vividly remember Harry Kane coming on when he was, you know, I guess he was like 19 or something. And the guy, you know, the idiot dad behind me, I vividly remember him going, use your pace, Harry, use your pace. You know, he's like joking about how crap Harry Kane was. And, you know, and then look at him now.
Yeah.
You know, where's this idiot dad now?
It's like, fuck you, old man. That's where we're getting at.
He was all right, do you know what I mean? But that's the thing. And then it was funny because then going to the Champions League games at Wembley, you're surrounded by totally different people and they're just as annoying. And in fact, worse, at the Champions League game, there were these two women sitting in front of me. You know, not that it's bad that they're women. So they were taking selfies the entire fucking game. And I wanted to kill them. And it's like, the annoying man who used to sit behind me and say, have a word. Like, he's my idiot.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You know what? I was just about to say that. It's better the devil you know.
Yeah.
And the club have got to keep people together that sat there. It's easy to track the people that have sat together for 10 years, easy, because you've got to keep those together because they're your idiot.
Yeah.
I've got a guy behind.
You've got an amazing guy next to you because when I, the Newcastle game.
Yes, yeah, he's not there anymore, sadly. There's a guy a couple of rows behind who thinks everyone's time wasting all the time. It doesn't matter what, we could be 1-0 up and the goalkeeper like takes a little bit longer to take it and he's going, come on! He explodes every game. And I love him. I will miss him so much. And I will probably regret that if I was to sit next to him in the new stadium, but yeah. You're right.
Like guys like that, that's again, that's
yours.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the soul of a club, I think, you know.
Definitely. I do agree. Last question. I really liked this question, and this is kind of a personal one for you guys. And everyone's going to have a different answer to this, and that's why I really like this question. Ken at AstroBall67, what was your favourite part of the stadium that a lot of people might have missed? Difficult one, obviously. Do you know the one that I'll answer it first? The one thing that it was a bit emotional yesterday, and it was quite sad, and you do tear up a little bit. The one thing that got me from Arsenal was, I know it sounds really stupid, but the shitty screen, and I was like, that is never going to happen again at Spurs.
The missing pixels.
The fact that you could watch a game and they could zoom in and you could still not know who the hell was on that screen. And in the middle of a bad half 12 kickoff, if the sun was out, you didn't stand a chance of seeing who was on that. And for me, that was like, that's never, ever going to happen again. And this crappy old screen that we've got that they refuse to replace for probably 5 seasons now, I think it is. It started to go around about then. That kind of got me a little bit, and that was my little thing. I was like, I'm going to take that, and I'm going to say that's going to be the thing that you say, oh well, you're lucky you never had the bad screen. you never had to try and work out Kyle Walker on a screen that's got 80% pixels completely missing. Do you know what I mean? Like that, and that got me a little bit, because all these old stadiums have got their little quirks and little things that you'll forever take away. And it's going to take a good couple of decades for that to happen in a new stadium, I think.
Yeah, that's a nice one. I think for me, my mate Alistair Gold wrote about this. He wrote 8 things he'd miss about White Hart Lane. And one of them was one that I always remember as a fan, is when you get into the stadium and you're in the lower tier, and this is particularly where the press box is. This happens a lot, and you can see the pitch through the entrances. And so I actually tweeted a picture yesterday, just on a goodbye old friend, and it was just the view from the kind of lower tier gangway through up the steps of the pitch. And
yeah,
I think
that is good.
When I first went there, as I said, I didn't used to go a lot. And it was like a treat when I get there, and I'd be like tremendously excited. I can't tell you how excited I was. And when you get into the stadium and you could just see the pitch for the first time, that kind of made it all real.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I'm going to watch the football, and they're going to be just there. And I think that's one thing I miss. And I imagine it's not normally kind of like that at modern stadiums. It just doesn't work that way. So,
but it will do for a next generation. It will work like that. As it doesn't matter about seeing it through the gangway, where the first time they see that pitch,
but
it will be. We have to cling to that a little bit. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's that old school, just above the steps, the little bit of green you can see above the steps, or the goal just behind. Ben, you've been going a long time. We'll give you the final word on this. What are you going to miss from...
Well, this is a weird thing, and this might be replicated in the new stadium, so maybe this is a bad answer, but from where I'm sitting, opposite, there's 2 flags, and one of them is, and they're both there for every game, and one of them is for Cyprus Spurs, and the other is a rainbow flag for the I can't remember what they're called.
LGBT supporters group.
And I always look at those flags, and it's a little bit of pride that, do you mean there's Cyprus Spurs and there's the LGBT, there's the rainbow flag, and it's... So no, I just find that a little bit moving. I think that's lovely.
I think that'd be quite nice to see them in the new stadium.
That's what I'm saying. They'll probably, but I don't know. They're so incongruous. The Cyprus and the, do these people come every week from Cyprus? Is that what's going on? I don't know. Maybe they're Cypriot and they live in London and they just want to represent Cyprus, but.
And it is every game as well. I see it. It's in the opposite corner to where
game,
I sit.
They're there. And it's just like, wow, good for you guys.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Those little touches, I think we've maybe underestimated just how much we'll miss them.
Whatever happened to the drummer?
Spurs drum. Well, he was back, I think he was a couple of seasons ago. They tried to get him back, but he sat right in the corner by the box where the broadcast is, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know what happened to you. I think it's just one of those things that kind of died out. We're probably unlikely to see that in the new stadium. I think that the one of the quotes that was bandied about a little bit, and it's a shame it's not a Spurs person, but Bobby Robson, who is an England person, let's say, a people person.
A legend regardless.
An absolute legend, who said something like, football is about, isn't about the necessarily the players or the board or anything like that. And he said it's about the young lad who sees the pitch for the first time at his stadium and without being able to do anything about it, falls completely in love. And I loved that. That's absolutely perfect. And I do think that's maybe what we should take away from White Hart Lane. The amount, think of all the many tens, hundreds of thousands of people that have had that exact moment at White Hart Lane when they've seen the pitch for the first time and without being able to do a single thing about it, just fell in love with Tottenham.
It's a nice note to end on, I think.
And we will end it there. Ben, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Next week, sorry, before we go, we're going to do a review of the season next week, aren't we, with Jim and Ollie?
Yeah.
End the season as we started. We'll be covering everything because I don't really care about Leicester and Hull. I couldn't give a shit. Sorry, we've not previewed it. If you expected it, then you're mad. But no, I don't really care.
Marcus Edwards, maybe?
No.
All right.
Shame. As a preview.
Yeah. All right. So, Ben, thanks so much for coming down. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. Dan, nice to see you, mate.
And you, mate.
For the penultimate episode. We'll see you next week. Thanks very much for downloading. Bye-bye.
Ciao.